Good morning. How much do you know about the produce you eat and feed to your family? With rising prices, concerns over herbicides, pesticides, and reports of contaminated food supplies, Alaskans are increasingly opting to grow as much of their own food as they can, even in the city. What does it take to feed yourself from a small piece of ground? Can you really grow enough to offset high food prices? How do you ensure that your crops are organic? Urban subsistence, we're talking about it, and we'll take your calls today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender. And by Penn Air, providing scheduled service to 36 communities throughout Southwest Alaska. Reservations online at pennair.com. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, sitting in for Steve Heimel today. Today we're talking about urban subsistence, gardening in the city, and raising your own food. How much is possible? What are some of the things that you need to know? We have some great guests today. Julie Riley is with us. She's a horticulturist with UAF Cooperative Extension Service. And also Mark Harper is here. He's a professor of geography, which doesn't probably have a whole lot to do with gardening, but he's an avid gardener right here in Anchorage, growing a lot of food in his front yard, and he'll tell us more about that. I have a terrible cold, so hopefully my voice will hold out for the next hour, and we'll be taking your calls. You can join us here at Talk of Alaska, and the numbers are 550-8433-8422. I have the wrong set of numbers in front of me. Sorry about that. 550-8422 or 1-800-478-8255 are the numbers to call. So you can join our conversation. Let's get started first with Julie Riley. Julie, tell us a little bit. You and I were talking about the classes that you've been having on Fridays, and they're a lunchtime class, and you told me that there's been great interest and participation in these classes. I think you said there were 60 people signed up for Friday's class?
60 people for beginning vegetable gardening on Friday. This is the first time that Cooperative Extension Service has done an urban farming series, and we've got six classes. This week it's going to be on chickens, raising chickens in the city, and the response has been phenomenal. We had young, old, brand new gardeners, lots of brand new gardeners, but also people who had been gardening for quite a while in Anchorage, because there's always something new.
You know, it's interesting to consider that term urban farming, because I grew up in a family of dairy farmers and crop farmers, and did quite a bit of that myself in my younger adult life. And so the it doesn't square to think about farming and think of urban in the same phrase. But people are raising more and more of their food. What are you seeing as far as you've been doing this for nearly three decades now? How has that interest changed?
There's been a huge shift away from flowers to vegetable gardening in Anchorage. When I first got here, I came from Shoots and Roots Urban Garden Program, where I worked with residents in inner city Milwaukee to grow vegetables on vacant city lots. And so if you said gardening to me, it meant vegetables. I got to Anchorage and you said gardening and it did not mean vegetables, it meant flowers. You had to be out in the Matsu Valley or down on the Kenai Peninsula before gardening meant growing your own food. So I think I saw a shift occur in the year 2000, and it built up slowly, but in the last 3 and 4 years, there's been a tremendous interest in growing your own food.
550-8422, excuse me, or 1-800-478-8255 if you'd like to join our conversation today on urban subsistence and urban farming. Mark Harper is an avid gardener real close to my neighborhood, actually. He's just a few blocks away, so I guess we're neighbors. And
Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. And Mark, you, if I'm remembering your property correctly, you have turned your front yard into pretty much a great big raised bed garden. So tell us about that.
Well, I began gardening probably about 4 years ago, and I did my backyard, and I started producing enough to feed myself. A few other friends, I guess for my expansion to the front yard, two things. I was a bit tired of mowing and really very little to do with the front yard other than to mow it, make it look pretty for my neighbors. And so I had these visions, and I've seen a variety of other yards, and you know, people are very creative in the way they display or present their households to their neighbors. And I took a lot of ideas from that, and so I started building last summer, actually, early May, constructing posts, building a raised bed series with a peripheral edge. And the desire for that actually comes from my neighbors across the street, because for couple Christmases, they had been giving me Christmas cookies, and they're really good. And one neighbor in particular, my neighbor Josephine, makes pistachio bread, so it's the best thing in the world. And I really had nothing of equivalence to give to them, other than you know some cheap product or something. And so I wanted to give them something a little bit closer to the soul. And so after they gave me Christmas cookies, I gave them cards of what would you like in terms of produce. So they put in their orders. And so I felt a need to expand my production, and so I did it. And it's been beneficial in a couple different ways, and that I was able to feed four households, including my own, with fresh veggies through the summer. And typically what I do is I bought some cheap baskets from Value Village, and each one for each household. When I harvest, I lay it on my front porch and make these little sort of bouquets. And it has all these different textures and colors, and it's all edible. And I present that to them and just see their eyes light up. So it's really nice. And I've met so many of my neighbors, at least on the street, because now I'm outside quite a bit. And it's catches people's attention because it's so different for that particular street. Again, there are many, you know, very creative, very attractive gardens, and I took a lot of inspiration from that. So I'm actually looking to expand a little bit more this summer because I've included another household. I guess one of your employees, Annie. Yeah, their household to be on my little CSA.
That's fantastic. And your beds, if I remember correctly, are they up off of the ground or are they ground level?
Well, they're on the ground. They're about from 12 to 16 inches high or depth of soil.
Okay.
So some are a little bit deeper, and I'll grow, you know, the deep-rooted plants there.
But they are ground level. I've seen some beds that are actually up sort of on, you know, they're shallower, so it's just salad greens and that sort of thing that people are raising. But it would be much easier to weed because there's no bending over. You're just standing in between the beds.
Right. 10 years down the road, I'm sure I will wish I had done that.
Yeah, my raised beds are also on the ground. But it is easier to weed them because of the fact that they're raised. You can sit on the edge of the bed. Mm-hmm. It's I like that option better than just traditional flat ground gardening.
Oh, I don't think I can even get down to the ground anymore. It's raised beds are fabulous. Mark, it's nice to see you giving your neighbors such a variety of vegetables and edible flowers. You know, the tradition has been drop the zucchini on the front porch and run.
That's right. That's how it was in Wisconsin when I was growing up. Neighbors bearing zucchini and tomatoes. At first it was great, but after a while you did kind of close the drapes because you were afraid that you were being inundated by zucchinis. What are the crops that you're growing, Mark, in your yard? And are you just concentrating on summer salad type things, or are you putting up vegetables that you're putting away for the wintertime?
Well, this is where I'm really deficient because I'm learning as I'm going. I'm one of these novice gardeners, and so my knowledge of the botany is rather limited. It's been sort of trial and error. So cabbages did really well last year. So I have some coal crops, some storage crops. I don't really have storage facilities, so I don't have any way to keep them. So if I don't give them away, it's a bit problematic. Mostly easy to grow greens, beets do really well. In terms of flowers, nasturtiums, I grow quite a bit of those, and I really like them. The flowers are good. They're very attractive. They have that peppery taste, but you know, a lot of people don't realize that it gives more than just that. You can eat the seeds. You can pickle them. They're like capers. And the leaves themselves can be chopped up and preserved in oil. And it's a nice little paste for crackers or toast and such. And I made nasturtium mead the first year, I grew a bunch of those. Kind of a funky flavor, but you know they ferment nicely, and they have a bit of a kick. So that was a lot of fun.
That is fascinating. You have really had some great experiences already in the time that you've done this. Are you planning to expand to more crops that you can put away for longer periods of time? I mean, you could certainly can or pickle beets, but how about some other crops?
Yeah, I think in terms of food preservation or putting away, I've been experimenting with that as well. I guess my logic for root crops, you know, is eat them. And one of the reasons I give so much away is because I don't really do well in the kitchen. So I don't know too many recipes or how to preserve these. So a lot of my preservation experiments have been a bit odd. I've pickled cabbage and stuff like that. And one of my neighbors really is pushing for cucumbers and tomatoes. Mm.
Oh.
So, yeah. So good portion of my space and effort's going toward that. So part of my logic is, you know, if a push comes to shove, I could get carrots and potatoes pretty cheaply at the market. And, you know, they can grow those at good scale. So my little operation is probably more for the high value type produce, sort of the bang for the buck.
Well, I love the expression that you used, a gift that's closer to the soul. That was a really nice way of putting that people had taken the time to bake and actually make something in their kitchen for you, and you wanted to return that with a little bit of your own work that went into creating the gift rather than just rushing out to the closest store and buying something. 550-8422, in the local area, 1-800-478-8255. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, we're talking about urban subsistence and gardening and urban farming today on Talk of Alaska, which is a topic very close to my heart, so it's fun for me to be talking about it. Julie Riley is with us today, and is Mark Harper. We'll also be joined later in the program by a couple other folks. Molly Voller will be coming on from the Natural Resources Conservation Service in Palmer. And we'll also be talking to somebody with Red Edge Design, Saskia Esslinger, who's helping folks design some urban farmsteads here in Anchorage. We're going to hear from a caller now in Anchorage. Mary is on the line. Hi, Mary.
Hello. How are you doing?
We are well. How about you?
Well, yesterday I transplanted the first of the tomato plants. We have a senior group that meets at St. Patrick's and covers all of East Anchorage. And we do a lot of fun things and a lot of educational and social things to help the community. And last year we had a master gardener in our group, and she brought us information on container gardening. And many of our seniors live where they don't have a garden space. Maybe they have a balcony or a sunny window. And so we worked with Lowell's to get tomato plants that hadn't sold yet. And with our senior money that we've earned through our projects, we bought about 400 plants and passed them out to our members and to the residents of Centennial Village. And that way they had the tomatoes, and they were able to put them in their windowsill, and they could add to their diet without any cost to them. And we also did this with geraniums later. And we started this first because we grow shamrocks that we sell as Irish May baskets. That's our big fundraiser. And the lady that helped us learn how to put the shamrock, condition the proper soil, and all taught us how to do the tomatoes, and we would like to get into lettuce so they could have a little salad. And so every morning when I get up, I go and open the shades, and there's all those little tomato plants growing, and they just make the house look so nice, and I know they're going to go to a good cause.
Well, Mary, I'm so glad that you brought up container gardening, because that's something that I definitely wanted us to talk about today. I, last year, for the first time, really experienced with container gardens beyond just flowers, which I always have lots of those in containers. But last year, we were reseeding our backyard, and so I couldn't reach very easily, couldn't get out to my raised beds, and so I put vegetables in containers and had some success with zucchini plants and some squash plants and a few other things. But containers are a great idea for folks, as you mentioned, who live in a small space, maybe only have a balcony or a very small area outside to put some containers on. And not everyone wants to dig up their soil, so they want to use containers. Julie, are there classes about container gardening, or what can you tell us about what's feasible and possible for growing things in containers?
Well, the key to success is matching up the vegetable with the container size. So I do have a fact sheet on container vegetable gardening. We had a class a few weeks ago on container vegetable gardening, and there's been an increase in people growing vegetables in containers as well as in ground gardens. So a few things just to be aware of is that the vegetables are going to take a little bit more attention unless you get them set up on an automatic watering system. But it's one way to perhaps grow vegetables that like a little warmer weather. I mean, last year was not a good tomato year. And Kathy Callow brought to class pictures of the tomatoes that she had grown in containers, and she would, you know, bring them in and out of the garage at night when it started to get cold. And then there's the moose issue, too. You know, I've talked to gardeners who have switched over to container gardening just because the moose was getting all the cabbage.
But what about, what can you realistically put into containers? Practically anything? I mean, could people put potatoes in container gardens?
Or? Well, that's not going to be very practical just because of the volume of space. I mean, you can do it. You can do it. For a potato plant, you'd need, maybe you could fit, you know, two plants in a whiskey barrel, half whiskey barrel size container. A standard size cabbage, standard size broccoli, you know, 1 5-gallon bucket. So it makes sense to grow some of the smaller vegetables. And I think, just window boxes, lettuces and window boxes are a fabulous idea. Or even indoors. I've grown green beans on a south-facing window in a little window box. And it wasn't real productive, but it sure was fun to go to the window and pick fresh green beans.
Yes. 550-8422. 1-800-478-8255 is the number if you're out of the Anchorage area. I want to talk a little bit about organic seed stocks and how you can ensure that you're getting organic and also what heritage seeds are. But let's take another call. Thank you, Mary, for your call. And now we're going to talk to Greg in Fairbanks. Hi, Greg. Wow. Greg is an alien. He's vegetable planting on Mars, I guess. Well, okay, we lost Greg. That's all right. I'm sure he'll either call back or we'll have other callers. You're listening to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. We're talking about urban subsistence today. Julie Riley and Mark Harper are in the studio with me. Let's talk about organic seeds or heritage seeds. Do you look for organic seed stock, Mark, or how do you go about getting your seeds?
Well, as I mentioned before, I'm new to this gardening affair. So my acquisition of plants or materials to grow plants have been either seeds or seedlings or starts. In regards to starts, typically when the farmers markets begin, I go there and there's one provider, River Bean Arctic Organics. And I don't know what it is he has with his potting soil, but in regards to starts, they've always been very successful, a very strong plant. I've gone to some seed exchanges, and also they've organized seed exchanges to the Cooperative Extension Services.
Well, it was the Permaculture Guild.
Right.
Used our buildings.
We should really make a plug for the Permaculture Guild, because there's a lot of very talented people on there. And it's a, sort of a social networking, a Ning site, and it's easily found, and they have all these monthly meetings and such. So I really got my footing there, and Saskia is the founder of that guild, and so she can speak more directly about that. But my own acquisition of this is either through seeds via seed exchanges or purchases at the markets or of starts.
Well, let's bring Saskia on. She's on the line with us now. Saskia Esslinger is with Red Edge Design here in Anchorage and has a little urban farm of her own. Hi, Saskia.
Hi, how are you doing?
Thanks for coming on today. And tell us quickly a little bit about Red Edge Design, what you do, and about your own setup at your home.
Okay. Great. Well, Redditch Design, our tagline is Urban Homesteads for Modern Living. So we're trying to help people live more sustainably in the city. And my husband is a home energy rater and is working more on the home site, and I'm more in the garden side of things. So I offer a lot of different workshops with Matt's help. We do everything from greenhouse design to sheep mulching workshops and chickens and all kinds of stuff. And then we also offer garden consultations, and I also do some design work for people that would like me to come out and design their whole site.
I was looking at your website the other day and saw something interesting about spiral herb gardens. Can you talk a little bit about what that is?
Yeah. Herb spiral is a really great concept from permaculture. And it's basically the idea that you're taking a whole row of pathside plucking herbs and you're winding it up into a spiral. And as you wind it up, it gets higher and higher. So you're taking advantage of vertical space. So you put the herbs at the top that like it, the conditions more dry, and then you put the herbs at the bottom that like the conditions a little more wet, and you can water the whole thing with one sprinkler head. So it's a real convenient way, and you can put it right next to your door so that when you're making a soup and you discover that you need a little bit of oregano to make your soup just right, then you can just step outside and get your herbs and come back in without having to run across the whole yard to get to your herbs.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
And how much food are you and your husband able to grow on your property for yourself?
Well, we definitely haven't maximized our space yet. We have quite a bit of space here, and we've been working on it slowly over the past 4 years. But we basically feed ourselves with vegetables for the whole year. We still have potatoes and carrots and parsnips, some frozen greens, broccoli, and zucchini in the freezer left from last season. So we're still eating on our vegetables. And we've got a lot of plants growing in the greenhouse right now that are going to start coming in, and we're going to be eating our own lettuce very soon.
And do you can or have other preservation methods that you use, or are you mainly freezing vegetables?
No, we do can. We love to make sauerkraut, which we can, and other lacto-fermented vegetables. We tried charred ribs this year, which actually turned out great. And then we can, let's see, we've made some relishes and chutneys and things like that we've canned, so.
All right, and Julie, do you want to jump
well,
in?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to say for people that are interested in food preservation and storage, we are going to have a session on this topic May 6th. In our urban gardening series, urban farming series.
Yes, fantastic. And so, Saskia, you also have chickens, is that correct?
We do.
Yes. And I understand that the city is working on the rules regarding chickens, ducks, geese, rabbits right now. It's my understanding that they still have to finalize putting these rules in place, but it looks as if it's probably going to happen. And I guess we'll be able to, or anyone who chooses to, will be able to have up to 5. It's my understanding that you can have 5 chickens.
Yeah, you can have up to 5 chickens on up to 6,000 square feet, and then one chicken or other small farm animal for every 1,000 square feet after that.
Okay, well, that's helpful to know. And it is a total of 5, correct? You can have you could have 2 chickens, 2 ducks, and a rabbit, but you couldn't have
right.
5 of each.
Exactly.
Okay. And no geese.
Yeah.
No peacocks.
No peacocks.
No male roosters. No roosters.
No roosters. Is it? And so you have chickens, and are you supplying just eggs for yourself, or do you have enough that you're selling to other folks? How does that work?
We have enough for ourselves and to share. We actually have tenants that live downstairs. We share with them, and we share with family and friends. So we mostly give away our extras.
All right. Well, thank you, Saskia, so much for joining us. And I'm sure it's getting to be a really busy time of the year for you folks with your efforts there at Red Edge Design. Thanks for calling and talking to us today. And we're going to hear from Jane now. Jane is in Kenai. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I've never gardened before, and I'm looking at doing some container gardening. And what's easy to grow, but you also get a good bang for your buck?
Oh, I think the salad greens. And there, you know, there's more than just lettuce. Mizuna, arugula, tatsoi. You can do Swiss chard. One of the things I discovered kind of by accident last year in working with refugee gardeners over in the McPhee Street Community Gardens in Anchorage is that young cabbage is really, really sweet. I mean, there's this point where it's just delicious added to salads before it gets a little tough. So I'm gonna be working with the group to add those to their lettuce, their salad mixes this year.
And what size containers would you use for those, for salad?
Well, if you can be diligent, you can just use a very low flat. That's the plastic flats like transplants come in. That's probably only a couple of inches high. It'd be easier if you would use a standard window box size container. You don't need the depth of a 5-gallon bucket.
Okay.
So it just depends on if you're home and can make sure that your plants get enough water.
Okay.
Well, good luck, Jane.
Yes, thank you very much.
You know, I would be happy to. I've got a fact sheet that I'd be happy to send you. Go online.
Okay.
To if you Google CES for Cooperative Extension Service Anchorage. And there I'll post my container vegetable gardening handout. I've already got a list of tomatoes and the size of containers that they need, but I will post the entire handout.
Great. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. And Jane will find out, as we know, that once you get started gardening, you're hooked for life. My son lives outside of San Diego, and he has, in the last 2 years, started gardening. And with a great deal of enthusiasm. And, of course, it's much easier there outside of San Diego. Than it's a little more challenging here than where he's at. But he's having a great deal of fun. And he said that it's been good for teaching him patience because he knows that he's kind of an impatient young man. So when he planted his tomato plants, he said, I kept running out on the deck looking at them to see if there were tomatoes yet. I told him it would take a little while. We are talking about urban subsistence today on Talk of Alaska, urban farming, which is an exciting way to think about how you can use your space for raising some wonderful, healthy food for yourself and your family. It's a great way to engage in wonderful family activities, to work with your kids, and we'll be talking more about that when Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news for over 26 years from Alaska's business sector, government, and industries. Information and subscription online at akbizmag.com. No other port in Alaska is building a 100-rail car loop like the one going in at Port McKenzie. Exporting natural resources from rail to ship will be more efficient than ever. A single limestone deposit in the interior could mean a cement industry in Alaska. Port McKenzie Rail, hundreds of millions in state revenues, thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska-Susitna Borough.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we're talking about urban farming. Farming is an issue close to my heart because I come from a long line of farmers and certainly brought that tradition as much as I could with me when I moved to the big city of Anchorage, my first city experience, and I immediately started trying to grow things in the backyard, and my neighbors laughed at me the first year because when I told them that I had tomato plants, they said, well, we didn't know you had a greenhouse. So I don't have a greenhouse. I put them outside. So it was a big lesson for me to realize that it's not that easy as growing tomatoes in Wisconsin. So I've learned a lot through the years, and I'm having much better success now. Give us a call if you have questions about urban farming, urban subsistence, 550-8422, or you want to offer your own stories about what you're growing, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, if you'd like to join our conversation. We're going to talk to Rosemary right now in Sterling. Hi, Rosemary.
Hello, Lori. What I wanted to say, I'm a master gardener down here, and if you go to Alaska Master Gardeners, you know, Google them. You'll get a .org somewhere along the line. And they have an Ask a Master Gardener hotline. And we've got all sorts of answers and opinions. You know, opinions are like noses. Everybody has one.
At least one.
At least one. To the gal that was talking about growing greens, we grow a lot of greens down here. And my daddy was from the South, so I cook them Southern style with ham hock, and I do add garlic. But you can grow mustard greens, you can grow turnip greens, you can grow chard. There's a new kale called Tuscan kale, which is absolutely delightful. It looks mean as crap, but it's also called alligator kale. But it is so mild, and in Tuscany, in Italy, they use it in bean soup, and it's wonderful. It's so sweet. It's so mild. And chard, after you've let it frosted, oh, and we also do beet greens for the greens, not for the beets. But
Well, you can send the beets my way if they're extra.
I canned them. I pickled them.
That's good.
And I make really dynamite pickles with a recipe from the Cooperative Extension Service.
Well, Rosemary, I'm so glad you brought up master gardening, because I was talking to a colleague earlier before the show about master gardener classes, and we were both lamenting that they seem to always be during the day, during the week. Are there any offerings, either Julie or Rosemary, that you could talk to us about for master gardening classes that are on weekends or weeknights?
There's the problem. We have lost our extension agent down here because of budget cuts. And he gave his last master gardening class. This is Tom Johns. And he gave his last master gardening class this spring.
Mm. Well, plans are
online.
Plans are underway to rehire that position.
Really?
Yeah, I'm on the committee, cool. Rosemary. We're going to get you an extension agent down there who can teach Master Gardener.
Fantastic. We're getting things done here on Talk of Alaska today, people.
Hey, yeah, in Anchorage.
Do you go to his interviews and that kind of stuff?
We'll talk later.
Well, Tom came.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Rosemary, for the call. We really appreciate you calling in, and it sounds like there's going to be another Master Gardener offering coming your way soon, which is great. And Julie, can you talk just a little bit about what I know that the Botanical Garden here in Anchorage offers Master Gardening classes, but schedule?
Yeah, the Master Gardener course is a Cooperative Extension Service course. And it is a way for us to extend the information that we have, because we don't have big staff. So Master Gardeners are volunteers for Cooperative Extension Service. So in Anchorage, I did teach the class in the evening last year, but now for the next few years, I will be teaching it during the daytime hours. And the reason I do it that way in Anchorage is because I've got lots of projects that need volunteer help during the day. And when I teach the class in the evening, you know, I've got three or four gardening groups that need master gardeners that I don't have because the class has been working. So I do a few classes during the day, and then I'll switch over to an evening class. But there is an online option. So if you go, to the website, you'll be able to find information on that. So the Alaska Botanical Garden has the Junior Master Gardener program.
Thank you for
and
that
it's
correction.
A little it's a little bit different than the Master Gardener program. The kids go through a series of 3-hour sessions out at the Alaska Botanical Garden and learn to grow vegetables and learn about other plant life at ABG, and they're signing up for that right now.
All right, that's fantastic. We want to get to some more calls here in just a moment because we've got some folks online and we certainly want to hear from them. But first we're going to bring Molly Voller on. She's on the line with us from Palmer, I think. Right, Molly?
Hello, it's great to be here.
Are you in Palmer today?
I am in Palmer,
okay.
Yes. But the Natural Resources Conservation Service has offices all over Alaska.
Right.
So we're not just Palmer located.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. And so talk to us a little bit about now the program, the Organic Ag Producer Program opportunity is for folks who are growing on a larger scale than urban farming, correct?
Usually, yes. The USDA Agricultural Marketing Service oversees the National Organic Program. So that's for your large-scale farmers who are selling the produce into the grocery stores.
And what is this new opportunity that's available to these folks?
Oh, our organic initiative, hosted by the Natural Resources Conservation Service, we also call ourselves NRCS, is to help those farmers and ranchers in their practices. That is, organic farming is really about soil fertility and crop nutrient management. So they need to use natural forms of maintaining their soil fertility. You following me on that?
Sure.
Does that make, yeah, okay, good. So the Natural Resources Conservation Service will come in and help plan windbreaks and field borders, filter strips, crop rotation, those kind of old-fashioned natural forms of keeping your soil fertile and intact.
Fantastic. And where can folks find out more information about this program?
Oh, you could go online and search for NRCS Organics.
All right. Well, thanks, Molly. We appreciate your coming on and talking on a little bit larger scale. But I think that it's good to remember that crop rotation and some of these other things, shelter crops, those kind of things, can still be applied to a smaller setting. I would imagine that, Julie, you can offer some ideas about good companion planting that go together well. I know that when I was raising very, very large gardens in the Midwest, one of the things that we always did was planted marigolds around the edge of the garden because it was supposed to keep certain pests away. Is that true or is that a myth?
Well, the research shows that marigolds do detract soil nematodes. But one thing I need to mention is that the color yellow, especially marigold color, attracts aphids.
Oh, no.
They love that color. But marigolds in the garden are beautiful, and I wouldn't discourage you one bit from putting marigolds in the garden, but you might switch to the cygnet type of marigolds because the flower petals are edible.
Right, and you certainly don't want to attract aphids. My goodness, that would be terrible. We still have Molly on the line, so Molly will ask you to come back in here in a moment, but let's talk to Anna in New Stuyahok. Anna, tell us about your gardening experience.
Actually, I only have a plant that did, and I forgot what it's called, to fix a burn when you burn.
An aloe vera?
On your body part. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I just used fertilizing mud to help it. Then I put eggshells on top of it because I know it helps with the plant to let it grow. And I was wondering about the moose-eating cabbage eater and also about the sheet designing and other things like the 4-H Club Agriculture Groups Organization Advisors, product sufficient income to repay the loan, provided the youth with practical business and educational experience, maximum loan must probably, if it's $5,000, and I was wondering about all these other things because here at this school here they're doing planting, and I wanted to
What are they planting? Do they have a garden plot? Do they have a garden plot outside, or is it a greenhouse?
It's like a dome. They have a dome, and last year when they tried planting the garden, the vegetables and stuff, they got ruined, and that's why I was interested in about the planting and all this, because some of them have good medicine, you know.
That's a good point, that there are a lot of plants and flowers and herbs that have medicinal qualities, and those are fantastic things that you can grow in addition to feeding yourself. You can also help with aches and pains, and there's ways to make concentrated oils from some of these plants and use those in sort of homeopathic ways of doing things. Anna, thanks for the call, and I'm not sure what you've got going on there for the school and for planting, but I'm sure that the Cooperative Extension Office could certainly help out with some of those efforts and expanding on that. Let's hear from David in Nenana. I'm interested in finding out if there's some gardening going on in Nenana. Hi, David.
Hello. We do have gardening going on in Nenana. People's home ops and stuff. But the thing I was wanting to inject was we live right at the edge of town. Nenana's a town of about 400 people, about 50 miles southwest of Fairbanks. And about 4 years ago, I wound up buying a dairy cow. And I'm not sure how that was going to work out. And and at this point, we have 3 cows and a bull and 2 pigs and about 25 chickens. And so so far, we've had nothing but positive responses from people. I was afraid, you know, that there might be smell or something like that, but so far, there's been very little in the way of smell. We have about an acre-sized lot that we work off of. And I think so far, we've been doing pretty well when it comes to the cost-benefit ratio. I mean, we value our milk from our cow at $6 a gallon because that's what sells for here in town. And so far, we've only had one cow milking at a time, and that one cow has more than paid for the price of the feed to feed the other 3.5 cows.
Well, that's fantastic. So you're able to supply yourself and sell enough to help keep the feed costs low. That makes a big difference, especially when people think about, as David said, weighing the cost benefit of either having animals to supplement your diet or raising crops. You have to be careful about how much you invest in containers and elaborate watering systems, so it'll take a while to pay those expenses back, but it can be a solid investment, especially as food prices keep rising. Okay. Thank you for the call.
So far, we've done very. We have a chicken house, you know, for our chickens, and we have a kind of another little add-on shed that we use for raising 50 broiler chickens last year, and that's where the pigs are at right now. I think as summer progresses, the pigs will move out, and then we'll maybe get some more group broiler chickens to put in that building, so it kind of serves more than one purpose. It was used for the calf for part of the winter as shelter, and when it comes to the cows themselves, so far we've done very little shelter-wise. They've stayed outside and survived quite well. The difficult part was just milking them when it got cold out. We'll probably have to change that this next year because it was a bit difficult.
Yes, I can imagine that in Nenana in the wintertime, going out to milk a cow early in the morning would be kind of a challenge. Well, thank you, David. It's fun to know that there's somebody on a small-scale dairy farm in Nenana. I would not have guessed that. Thanks for your call, David. We're going to talk to Tom in Juneau. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Are you an urban farmer?
Well, no. I'm a master gardener who's still working on his volunteer time, but I do container gardening, and I was hearing other people kind of curious about that, wondering how to start, and I'd like to make some comments that direction.
Please do.
Yeah, well, I think I got my introduction into gardening by just simply taking some plastic dish pans. And I poked some holes in the bottom of it and added a little gravel in it and then put soil on top of it. And I got some salad mixes. And one of my favorite makes is called Mesclun, M-E-S-C-L-U-N. It's a variety of various lettuces and spinaches and arugula, and different seed companies alter the mix a little bit, but it looks a lot like a European salad mix that you might buy in a grocery store.
Right, I'm very familiar with it. I've raised that myself.
Yeah, and I call that my money crop. And I don't sell that to anybody. I just eat it myself, but it keeps me out of the grocery store spending money on other things.
You know, and Tom, how many crops can you grow in a season? That's one thing that I wanted us to get to in this conversation, is the fact that you're not just planting once in the spring. If you want to keep raising salad greens, you can also do at least a second planting, I would think, of peas or green beans. So let's hear from you about how many crops you're growing in one season, and then maybe Julie and Mark can weigh in on that also.
Yeah, well, I do early spring salad greens and then also late fall. And I have the best results, I think, because of the increasing daylight hours stimulates plant growth for the springtime. But any of the plants that are good to eat and pick young also will come up in the fall. And the heat of the summer sometimes makes that a problem, as far as they tend to dry out or go to seed too quick. But I, as far as that, those salad greens, I often take a couple, and I'm graduating to bigger containers. I'll comment on just a second. But with the salad greens, I'll plant one dish pan or, you know, a small container, and then a week or two later plant another one.
Right.
And so as I harvest, then I have an alternative coming up.
Right.
But the other thing I've done for containers that works really well is I take a shipping pallet, and I stretch some geofabric over it. It looks like felt made out of polypropylene. And then I frame up all the way around it with 2x material, such as 2x4s or 2x6s or 2x8s on edge. And I build this wall all around the pallet, log cabin style, on edge. And then I fill that with dirt. And what that gives you is about a 4-foot square growing container. And then I monocrop in that. I put carrots in one, and another one I might put beets or cabbage stuff in another one, and rotate my crops year after year so that I don't get pest problems. But that gives me a good quantity to really produce lots of vegetables.
Well, that's a really fascinating idea, to use a pallet to turn it into a container. And it's interesting to me, because I built 2 3x6 raised beds in the backyard out of 2x10 lumber. And those work quite well. But I'm thinking now, in terms of turning more and more of my yard into vegetable patches instead of just always flowers, and I'm planning to build some more containers along one stretch of a fence so that I can let peas and things that vine climb up that fence. And so I'm interested in your pallet idea. Thanks a lot, Tom, for the call.
You betcha. Yeah, and grow, baby, grow.
That's right.
We're down here.
Thank you very much. 550-8422 or 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call. And Mark, we need to take a break here in just a minute, but tell us, how often do you replant in the summer? Do you plant 2 or 3 plantings of lettuce and other greens?
Yeah, I think the strategy of successive seeding is really good, because you can use your space, and also based on the rate of consumption of the plants or material in terms of biomass. There are a few crops I've been able to sort of do 2 at once. Radishes work really well. And I think also spinach is good for an early season and also a late season. It tends to bolt with full sun. So after a couple years of, you know, hit and miss with that, I think it's good. Also, if you can incorporate some sort of season extension techniques, which, you know, low tunnels or, you know, sort of like small greenhouses and stuff like that, allows that, you know, to push it, the growing season a bit.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about urban subsistence today on Talk of Alaska. We'd love to hear from you. We've got some callers to get through and a whole lot of other great information today as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska, and by Full Circle. Full Circle grows, picks, and delivers fresh, certified organic produce year-round. More information about their 400-acre farm and their organic partners at fullcircle.com.
Aura. Hi, welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we're talking about urban farming, and we have guests in the studio. Mark Carper, who is an avid gardener here in Anchorage, is with me, as is Julie Riley, who is with the Cooperative Extension Service, and we're talking about urban farming. We talked a little bit about organic seeds, but did we touch on heritage seeds and what exactly that means? Julie, can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, heritage is, you know, your gardening heritage. So there are seeds that have been passed down from generation to generation. They're often called heirloom seeds. And now there are many, many varieties that you'll find labeled as heirloom, but you may have been growing these plants for generations yourself. Some that are oftentimes not thought of as heirlooms, but are would be oak leaf lettuce, some of the kales, rosemary that called in and talked about Tuscan kale. I'm finding references to that being an heirloom vegetable. And then these purple and cauliflowers that I've been seeing in recent years that are so beautiful. There is a violet one that is listed as an heirloom. So heirlooms, seeds, heirloom vegetables, there are different definitions. You know, some people say 100 years old, some people say 50 years old after World War II, but basically it's seed that's been passed from generation to generation, that and they are varieties that are not being used by large-scale agriculture. They're not hybrids. They're open-pollinated varieties. So there's a lot of interest in maintaining diversity in the, you know, the gene pool of the crops that we eat.
And the importance of open pollination versus, I imagine you're talking about genetically modified seed stock.
No. And I'm glad you brought that up because people do confuse that. A hybrid is just where you take pollen from a particular variety and then you transfer that to, a female flower so that you can breed for particular characteristics. It might be disease resistance, it might be bigger fruit, thinner skin, better flavor, but it has nothing to do with genetic modification.
Okay.
It's just selecting pollen, selecting a mother and a father. It's not putting different genetic material into the plants. So open pollinated means you've got a field of that particular variety or strain, and then you just let pollination happen.
And we're going to take another call here in just a second, but are there problems with bees in our area? Do we have enough bees to cross-pollinate things? And how does that work in the city?
Well, the more actually raising bees in the city helps with pollination. And oftentimes you'll find that people have their hives up high, on a garage or up on top of the house, and they need good access to be able to get in and out. So there are quite a lot of beekeepers in Anchorage, and I'm sure in other parts of the state as well. The problem is that they don't overwinter. You have to bring in new honeybees every year. So in terms of our native bees, it's the bumblebees and mason bees, some of those really early flying bees that are able to pollinate blueberries, for example, things that flower early in the season before there's much insect activity.
Well, let's hear from Daniel here in Anchorage. Daniel, welcome to Talk of Alaska. Are you an urban farmer?
My wife and I are, yes, we are, for many years. my question is, well, actually, I had a thought while you guys were talking. When my wife first and I first started gardening, we probably did what everybody thought of and go to Home Depot and try to get the right kind of materials to build a raised bed. And we started with normal pine, and we moved to cedar. We thought that would last longer. And now we've progressed to cottonwood trees. And we all have those in Anchorage. They're huge. They don't have a lot of BTU value. So we just dropped them and dug them in the ground. And, you know, they're about 16-inch, 20-inch diameter, and they make great raised beds. And we've got several of those out in the yard, and they're about 7 or 8 years old, and they're not really rotting as much as I thought they would. Our neighbor has them. He's had the same set for 15 years.
Interesting.
He said, you know, after about a decade, you don't want to step on them, but they still hold the soil real well.
Are you peeling the logs, or are you leaving the bark on?
No, just leave the bark right on them. You know, and you know the way that lumber costs nowadays, it's a really economical way to build a bed, and that's from our own experience. But the question I had was, we've been raising the same potatoes for 10 years. We keep the seed stock every year. And this year, the mice finally got to them, and we lost most of them. And I was wondering, do you have any free, or if anybody, a caller, has a free source of local disease-free seed potatoes?
I don't know of any free source of seed potatoes, but the Division of Agriculture is asking that you not import seed potato into Alaska. That's the only restriction that we have, is to try to keep late blight out. So it's potato seed and tomato seedlings that are restricted. But there are a number of potato seed producers in Alaska, and some of them are organic growers. So you can find certified seed for quite a few varieties, even some of the more unusual cultivars, purple-skinned fingerling potatoes. My favorite is German Butterball.
actually, I went to school with a woman who's she's from Southeast Ketchikan. She had a set of potatoes from her grandmother. They were they call them Haida potatoes there. They're these small little knobby, thin-skinned yellow potatoes. And apparently, she's had those in her family for over 100 years.
Yeah, and that's cool. Those potatoes supposedly, well, the testing that's been done on them show that they do have virus in them, and so. It'd be best not to bring them up to South Central, where we have a seed potato industry down in Southeast. The potato virus isn't going to cause problems, but up here it could be.
Okay, thanks.
Well, thank you, Daniel. Thank you for the call and the suggestions about being able to use cottonwood or maybe other, if folks have other old lumber or trees laying around, consider using those for building some container beds this summer and get out there and garden. Take your kids, get everybody involved in the family. It's a great way to raise some healthy vegetables for yourself. Thank you to the callers. Thanks to my guests, Julie Riley, Mark Carper, Molly Voller. Thanks to Dave Waldron on as our audio engineer, Josh Edge, and BD Trantina on phones. I'm Lori Townsend. Thanks for listening to Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by Alaska Business Monthly, providing a source for statewide in-depth business news on Twitter at AK Business Month or Facebook. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.